Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Alrighty then. Welcome to a brand new week. It's the 11th of August, as if you didn't know, because, you know, I'm the only guy with a calendar around here. Right? Yeah, okay. Like I said, welcome to a brand new week of conversation radio. Welcome to a brand new week of independent broadcasting. Welcome to a brand new week of your thoughts, your observations, via email, via telephone. Sort of closing the distance, closing the gap between us, and eliminating the isolation. Yeah. So I hope it'll be a good week. I've got a couple of announcements just to get things started. It looks like tomorrow may be dicey for me. Okay. Well, no. Let's start with tonight. There will be no live Strictly Confidential this evening with Peter Godbold for one very good reason. And that is, the worst internet service provider on earth is still, well, at this point what they're doing is they're defrauding their customers in the service area where Peter Godbold has his studio. Because it's not just Peter. It's ridiculous. I've been seeing Peter's, he's been sending graphs showing his bandwidth coming from Embark, E-M-B-A-R-Q. And it's ridiculous. He has less than, he's paying, and everybody around there is paying for broadband speed, broadband bandwidth. and they're getting something approaching a little less than dial-up. No kidding. And it is messing with Peter's ability to do his job. It's messing with his ability to do his show, and it's messing with everybody in that area. So Peter is, suffice to say, boiling mad, and I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. So there won't be a live Strictly Confidential this evening. Now, as to tomorrow and Wednesday. Tomorrow is an unlikely show day for me, for one very good reason, and we won't go into the graphics of it. But I have an upper GI study scheduled for Wednesday, and apparently that requires the use of some rather high-powered chemicals that will keep me from, shall we say, being able to be in one place for very long at any given time. So me being behind this microphone for 3 hours is looking highly unlikely. Okay? So that's what, that's that. So I wouldn't count on, I mean, if I'm able to, I will. You know me. But I wouldn't count on there being a show tomorrow evening. Then the study itself is on Wednesday. Early in the morning Wednesday, hey, you know, maybe I'll feel good enough to crawl behind the microphone Wednesday evening, and we'll do some prayer meeting, and I'll just beat me. we'll give prayers of Thanksgiving or something, you know. But those are a couple of dicey days. Now, some other things. I have kept quiet and not told y'all the inside skinny. I won't use Mark Levine's trademarked inside scoop phrase. but I haven't told you the inside skinny on what went on with us trying to go to the convention, because us going to Denver started out, you know, we started back in December trying to get credentialed, and that flopped, and I gave up. And then a rather surprising opportunity seemed to open up, and it looked like we were go to go again. And that was something that they're doing in Denver called the Big Tent. You can go to the website, bigtentdenver.org, and they'll tell you how it's a 9,000-square-foot, air-conditioned, two-story tent that it's designed specifically for new media and independent media. So I got on the phone, and I talked with the guy there who was kind of in charge of things based on the article I'd read. And it was, wow, Bob, that sounds great. Organizations like yours are exactly what we designed this for. Call me back, don't be afraid to call me several times just to, you know, keep this in the forefront of my mind. We're very busy getting this set up, but call me, Bob, because, you know, we want this to happen for you. All right? You with me so far? Good. So I did. I followed up, as is my practice. I followed up with a very nice email. I thought, you know, saying, you know, look, here's what we need. You know, we need a table and three chairs. He said, you know, electricity could be kind of dodgy. We're doing everything with charging station stuff. And I said, fine. We've got a beautiful pure sine wave inverter generator. We can bring that with us. We'll provide our own electricity. We could even get wireless internet and provide our own internet. All we need is a table and three chairs. That's it. A table and three chairs. And frankly, just so you'll know what was going into this, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch were in order to get Coal River Mountain Watch's message out too. We're willing to be in on the trip. Nick, whom you've heard call in from time to time, was volunteering to take the ride. Another individual was going to go along too. And a couple of listeners who are filmmakers. And I don't know if I have their permission to name names, so to speak, or not. So I won't. But they were going to go as well and begin work on what they have envisioned as a horn documentary, a documentary about the horn. about what the horn does, about how, you know, how we accomplish what we accomplish, who we are. And it was all just looking very, very exciting. We had planned to leave West Virginia and make it about a three-day trip, stop along the way, do my show every evening from wherever we were. We were looking especially toward stopping along about Kansas City and hanging out for a little bit with the guys from WD40.com. I was so excited about that. That was going to be such fun. And you'll notice I'm speaking in the past tense. That's because none of this is going to happen. And it's not going to happen for one very specific reason. As I told you, I phoned repeatedly, just following up, making sure, you know, we don't want anything from you. We're more than happy to pay for our space, because it was like $100 per person per week. You know, we were going to pay all that. We just need a table and three chairs. We'll do the electricity. We'll do the internet. Table and three chairs is what we need. And so I followed up with emails, and I followed up with phone calls. None of my phone calls were ever either returned or taken by this individual after the first phone call. None of the emails were ever responded to until 2 weeks later I got one saying, "Dear Bob, I just wanted to let you know that we won't be able to accommodate your needs for broadcasting from the big tent. Please call me," and he gave me his cell number, "please call me on my cell phone to discuss other possible options. But we can't, our space is at a premium, and we can't provide space for anyone who isn't a," and this is the operative words, "significant sponsor. We cannot provide you space unless you are a significant sponsor of the Big Tent." So I took the guy at his word. I called him back. I called his cell phone number repeatedly. Nothing but voicemail. Left a couple of voice messages. Never got a call back. I also emailed him and said, "Look, I'm interested in, you know, whatever options there are. I want to know what they are. And if you'll tell me how much a significant sponsor costs, I'll try to maybe do some coalition building and try to put that together, if that's what it takes to get us into the door." That was 2 weeks ago. And I have not heard back from the voicemail, and I have not heard back from email. So I'm taking that as we're done. And the real shame of it is that what I was looking at, just so you'll know what my thinking was, and this isn't whining, I'm not whining. I'm disappointed. I'm decidedly disappointed, because this was going to be a chance for us to do what I think we can do very well. And that is engage conversation with people that big-time radio might not otherwise ever be interested in. I was looking forward to talking to the people in the free speech zone, or the free speech zoo, or whatever it is they're calling it. You know, the free speech zone that you can't even see, you can barely see the Pepsi Center from. We have the technology. I could have walked down there and interviewed folks. There's supposedly going to be a lot of progressive bloggers and activists and journalists inside the big tent. We could have given exposure to those folks too. But no, not quite. So that's what went down with our hopes for doing the Democratic National Convention either inside it or outside it. Now, bear in mind, Guy James is credentialed for inside the Pepsi Center, and Mark Levine is going out as well. He says he will find his way into the Pepsi Center by hook or by crook, that he will not take no for an answer. And you know what? When Mark Levine tells me that, when Mark Levine tells anybody that, you can put that in an envelope and take it to the bank. So we will have, the horn will have a presence at the convention. It's just not going to be, well, shoot, I wanted to be there. But, you know, Too bad. So sad. Bye-bye. So in essence, we got snubbed with a shakedown at the end. I'll be happy to put that show anybody the email that wants to see it, where it says, you know, we don't have a table and three chairs for you unless you become a significant sponsor. Then I write back and see the frustrating point out of all this for me is it tells me how far we have to go as liberals, as progressives, as Democrats, as decent human beings before we are ever going to get where we need to be. It shows me how far we have to go to get where we need to be. Because, you know, our side is very, very good at pissing and moaning about how the right wing controls the media and about how five or six corporations control virtually everything that is printed, broadcast, or otherwise in this country. And we sit and we wring our hands and we say, oh, Lordy, if only we could build our own liberal media, if only we had our own media infrastructure. And then somebody, namely Wayne, me, Agnes, Ben Birch, John Fox, Peter Godbold, Guy James, Mark Levine, our moderators in the chat room, our video builder, ELO, our news ninjas, Susan and Jean, our blogger, Texas Betsy, and you who listen to the program, share your ideas, and contribute to keep the programs on the air, will you go out and you make liberal media infrastructure? And you create talk radio, conversation radio that can compete head to head with the big boys anywhere, anytime, any day. And then we try to go out and do things and we don't have a table and three chairs. I'm sorry. We don't have 18 square feet out of 9,000 that you can use. Unless you become a significant sponsor. Am I pissed? Yeah, I'm pissed. I'm pissed because I didn't get dissed. You got dissed. The idea of live internet radio broadcasting coming from Denver got dissed. Oh sure, there will be other, apart from Guy James and maybe Mark Levine, there will be others there. Apparently Air America was able to get, when we couldn't get 10 credentials inside the Pepsi Center, Air America got something on the order of credentials for their hosts and all of their tech people because, you know, in that rarefied atmosphere, the hosts don't exactly know what makes all the stuff go. They're not like us. They're not, so, you know, the tech people, the setup people, the producers, the screeners, the yada yada engineering, and then the talent. They got credentialed for that inside the Pepsi Center. Jealous? Yeah, maybe a little bit jealous. Because after all, whether it's Guy James, Mark Levine, or me, we've all of us been doing this longer than Air America. And a lot more successfully, frankly, because we don't have a bankruptcy to our name. We've never screwed Randy Rhodes over. We've never fired Mike Malloy. We didn't even. Well, never mind. But you know how I feel about full disclosure, and I felt like you deserve to know why we weren't going and how that worked out, because I don't want you thinking that, you know, I just gave up on it. I poured heart and soul into this for literally nearly a month. And at the end of the day, when we said all we need is a table and three chairs to set it up in, listen, we'll bring the table. We'll bring the folding chairs. All we need is the space to put it on. No, sorry. So, you know, next time you hear some progressive, some liberal saying, well, you know, we need to take the media back. Well, take note that, remember, that we are trying to do that. But the people who are trying to do that run into brick walls and closed doors as often as they run into anything approaching welcoming access. And it's not just the horn. I mean, the struggle to build liberal, progressive radio has been one of more shut doors than open ones, whether it's Air America, whether it's Nova M, whether it's the horn. That's been the experience. So just because that's how it works. Oh, that's great. You're doing you're building liberal media. Hey, that's great. Well, yeah, it is great. Would you be willing to help us stay on the air? Oh, you want money? Well, we'll sure help you set up some guests. Well, that's great. We can get guests. What we need is the ability to keep the bills paid from month to month. Oh, we don't have any money. I mean, we might be an organization with 1 million members, but we don't have any money. Well, no, you know, we're not talking about $1 million. We're talking about $20,000 that'd keep us going. Oh, we don't have any money. So just remember that when you do hear people on our side of the debate talking about the need to build liberal media. What they mean is the need to build liberal media that they control. Because at the end of the day, you cannot control the message that comes out of the horn. Because it's your message. It's the message that you deliver via your phone calls, your emails. And it's the message that Guy James and Mark Levine and me and Peter Godbold and John Fox and Rick Goodner and Rick Smith and Billy Shears all deliver. And it is not subject to institutional control. Hell, I won't even offer editorial control to any of these shows. This is absolute broadcast freedom. And I think on our side of the debate, that scares some people worse than just continuing to be lambasted by the right wing. Because ultimately, it is about message control. Okay? So at least you know what the skinny is. You know what's going on. You know you got the 411, like the hep cats like to say. Yeah, and I'm pissed. I'm real pissed. That's okay. I'll get over it. In the meantime, let's crank it up with the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, brother. I'm pissed, too.
Hey, Albert. What's up, brother?
I'm pissed.
Yeah.
No, I'm pissed. That pisses me off. Big time.
Oh, I could have frothed at the mouth and stuff and talked about what a shitty way that would... Oop. That is to, treat somebody on our side. But, you know, what's the purpose? I got every excuse available for putting somebody off on the telephone. And then and you know how I am about email, Albert. I will bust my butt. If I get an email, I'll either share it on the air or I will respond to it privately via reply email. If there's anything in a note that says, you know, can you please, will you please, I will make sure that I get a lot of email. But I make a habit out of responding, and to just sit there, to be dissed, to just be treated like spam. Yeah, I'm a little hot.
I'm thinking, next to their really big, all, you know, corporate inclusive tent, that you just get your own little light little tent. You just need a table and chairs. Sure, we can get you a nice little one of them pop-ups.
No, well, it ain't happening. I mean, we've got the little four-cornered tent, but you know what? That's just pathetic.
It is. Well, it is for them.
Yeah, and kind of us, too, because, I mean, but, no, it ain't happening.
Yeah.
And I'm usually not one to give up. But this time through, yeah, I guess.
I don't understand Colorado. What's up over there? My friend lives over there. She tells me stories about the way those people are, and it just maybe we're too combative.
No, this isn't Colorado. This is the institutions and organizations bringing this stuff together.
Is it?
And, you know, and it was an exciting thing. I think the idea of the Big Tent is a beautiful idea. They pulled together sponsorships from Google and Big, YouTube Kiosk. They've got sponsorships from New Belgium Brewing Company, the Colorado Sustainability Alliance or something like that. I think the tent is being donated or provided at a vastly reduced cost. They've got a great idea on their hands. They just didn't have 18 square feet for us to put a table.
That's absurd.
Unless, of course, we became a significant sponsor.
Yeah. Exactly. What do they want, $10,000?
I don't know. I wrote back. I said, "What? How much does significance cost?" And you know, I didn't get a return email.
Yeah, because I think that's the game. You know, they can't ask for it. You have to just, you know.
Yeah. What is this? Is this like being on a Bentley lot? If you have to ask how much it costs, you can't afford it.
Can't afford it, pretty much. Probably. Yeah. That turns my guts almost as much as what's going on over in Georgia.
Yeah, well, you know, welcome to pay to play.
Yeah, pay to play.
Why should I be surprised that it's any different inside the Democratic Party than it is inside the Republican Party? Media message control and access limitation. Sure. Yeah. No, but yeah, it is. That's nothing by comparison to what's going on in Georgia. Death and destruction is raining out of the skies on an almost continual basis. At this point, it's a full-on war. Russian troops have gone into Georgian territory. They're driving on a city named Gori with the aim of completely eliminating the Georgian military. And in the process, Georgians are shelling and the Russians are shelling and the price is, of course, as usual, as it always is with war, the price is being paid by the people who aren't in it.
Yep.
Women, children, the elderly, people in apartment buildings that are being shelled deliberately, charming bunch.
War. Mm-hmm.
What is it good for, Albert?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Population control. How about that? Acclimation of wealth and, you know, building upon that. And all kinds of good stuff like that, you know.
Yeah, of course there are political undercurrents here that just can't be beat. Things like, regarding a little old oil pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How is it every time grandmothers start exploding, there seems to be an oil pipeline nearby? It just beats the hell out of me.
It's disgusting. Did you see Bushy's first little, it would have to be nonverbal communication. You need your skills honed on the body language, but did you see his interaction with Putin at the Olympics?
No, I did not. Frankly, all things... I'm running my own little Olympic boycott.
I ain't watching nothing about them.
It is a non-occurrence for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so we're not everyone in the world. Okay, anyway, I'm glad you're out there, brother. I'd be all alone.
But I
did see Bush because this was about this Georgia conflict, and I saw them meet, and they had some words, and Bush gave them if someone was to ask you a question, if we were having a barbecue, hey Bob, can I get another beer? And you just kind of, you're asking me for, you know, same difference.
You know where it is.
Yeah, he gave him an, he's like, nah, and he kind of shook his head and gave one of those, frowns, but not, you know, like a no big deal frown. And that's exactly what I saw, and obviously not hearing anything about it. The BBC reporting Well, I guess because they're closer to it, so, you know, and, like, their people aren't as censored as ours, in a way, I guess. They were talking about how it's Georgia that initiated it and how it's Russia that's defending themselves or defending
themselves. Well, they were at one point because South Ossetia or Ossetia or however one pronounces it, mm-hmm. Wanted to break away from Georgia because
yep.
I guess it's got a semi, yeah, sort of a Russian Georgian Sudeten land, if you will.
Yeah, it's like a country. I mean, who knows how long they've been a country of their own.
But they, you know, they wanted to break away from Georgia, so Georgia was trying to enforce its will, mm-hmm. and the Russians came to the defense of the South Ossetians, and so they, you know, pitched battle. But now the Russians have gone on and pressed into Georgian sovereign territory with the idea of putting the spank down on them once and for all, because there are things at work under here. Georgia wants to be a member of NATO, okay?
Yep.
Now, yeah, offhand, I can't remember. What does NATO stand for, Albert?
it stands for stuff that has nothing to do with anywhere that region is near.
North Atlantic Treaty Organization?
Something like that.
Yeah, and how far is Georgia from the Atlantic?
As far as we are from it.
Yeah, it's like the distance from Vegas to Kennebunkport, you know, because there's some North Atlantic there at Kennebunkport. But, you know, we want to do that to poke Russia with a sharp stick, because that's always fun, poking Russia with a sharp stick. And it always leads to such positive results.
Mm-hmm.
We want to poke Russia with a sharp stick. I was asked the other day, Albert, Bob, do you think that we're going to get into the Georgian-Russian conflict? And I said, get into? We already are.
Yep.
You know, we've sent 1,000, and as far as I know, we may still have 1,000 Marines there as military advisors. Where have we heard that one before?
Oh, something about, well...
I think there were jungles and rice paddies involved the last time, I think, but...
Bob, it's every time, Nicaragua, Panama, any of that stuff, all that stuff is always military advisor.
Yeah.
It's
now, the trick is, however, a dead military advisor 3 days in the heat stinks as bad as a dead soldier.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's that shading of difference. Oh, no. And, in fact, now we're doing troop transport. Did you see that, Albert?
Yes, we are.
The third largest provider of troops to the Coalition of the Willing just happens to be Georgia with 2,000 soldiers in Iraq who now need to go home to fight the Russian hordes.
Yeah.
So we're flying at Georgia's request, you, me, us, the American taxpayers, we're paying to fly the Georgian troops from Iraq back to Georgia. How's that sit with you there, paying nearly $4 a gallon for gasoline here at home? I'm liking that a lot.
Well, we pay way more than that for that jet fuel. We pay like something around $100 a gallon for it. So, and those things burn it by the ton. So, have fun figuring that out, how much it costs the planes to fuel up in Iraq to move these troops out when, not for nothing, in a sense. I mean, Russia has a valid point when they talk about how can you be doing this. Like, that would be like us moving troops or moving Iranian troops into you know what I mean? After a war breaks out, that'd be like us putting these people into the war. Into the field of combat.
We're providing providing material support
exactly.
for the Georgian response to the Russian advance. Or, you know, but see, there's no right and wrong. As is often the case with wars like this, there's no right and wrong.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, I don't want to be perceived as being pro-Russia or pro-Georgia, because I'm anti-war.
Mm-hmm.
And had they wanted to, these people could have done this without coming to blows, without resorting to without hotting it up to a hot war.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't want to. And the Georgians didn't want to because they got George Bush and Dick Cheney back there, and Dick Cheney's going, well, you know, you can probably teach those Russians a real lesson. Yeah, remember how George looked into Putin, Pooty Poot's soul?
Mm-hmm.
And saw somebody he could work with there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, when he started, I remember the first time when he said that, I remember just sort of in the metal soundtrack that plays in my mind. And I looked into his eyes and I saw into his soul. I'm hearing the theme from A Summer Place. I don't know about you. Nah, 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 nah. Yeah. Ugh.
Oh, Bob, we fell into a vortex of strangeness the other week. It's just unbelievable. Last week we did. This is unbelievable. Like, this could be really bad. I mean, this could be...
It ain't going to be good, and it don't end well.
This can end pretty rough. I mean, this could be, the elections don't matter bad.
But see, this absorbs Russian attention. You got to get on the chessboard now, Albert. This absorbs Russian attention because we want Russian attention diverted from being able to play the great game with us in Iran.
Yes.
Okay. Because the other part of this whole set piece is the following. Just a few names for you: USS Abraham Lincoln. Nuclear-powered supercarrier, Carrier Air Wing 2, Destroyer Squadron 9, the USS Mobile Bay, the USS Russell, the USS Monson, the USS Shoup, the USS Ford, the USS Ingram, the USS Rodney M. Davis, the USS Kurtz, plus a hunter-killer submarine, the USS Peleliu, the USS Pearl Harbor, the USS Dubuque, the USS Cape St. George, the USS Halsey, the USS Benfold, the USS Theodore Roosevelt, the USS Monterey, the USS Mason, the USS Nitze, the USS Sullivans, the USS Springfield, another hunter-killer submarine, the USS Iwo Jima with Amphibious Squadron 4 and the 26th Marine Expeditionary Unit, the USS San Antonio, the USS Velia Gulf, the USS Ramage, the USS Carter Hall, the USS Roosevelt, the USS Hartford, another nuclear-powered hunter-killer submarine. I'm going to make a point here. Just let me get done with the list.
Mm-hmm.
The USS Ronnie Raygun, the USS Chancellorsville, the USS Howard, the USS Gridley, the USS Decatur, the USS Thatch, the USNS Rainier, the HMS Ark Royal and its carrier strike group.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, there's a few more. The USS San Jacinto, the USS Anzio, the USS Normandy, the USS Kearney, the USS Oscar Austin, the USS Winston S. Churchill, the USS Carr. What do all these ships have in common?
Well, a couple things. Real quick, you may not know or not, but I used to send the orders to fleets like that to tell them when to go, and they always wound up going there 30 days or so before they had to be there. And then when they were there, it was a good thing they were there, and we'd launched Tomahawk missiles on Iraq.
Well, that's the lovely part of this. We're going to park all of those ships in the Persian Gulf.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Pearl Harbor, Part 2.
Well, there are quite a few nuclear-armed vessels in that list you just put out, and especially all the subs. So,
I mean, some of them are already on station, Albert. The other ones are going. That's a big chunk of the entire United States Navy.
Yeah. You listed, what, about 50? And there's already two fleets in there now. You did name two carriers. I think we only have seven or six or something like that. Seven or eight, who knows? Who knows? They keep buying them and building them.
Well, it boils down to Carrier Strike Group 9. Peleliu Expeditionary Strike Group, Carrier Strike Group 2, and the Iwo Jima Expeditionary Strike Group, and Carrier Strike Group 7.
Oh.
We're gonna park. Albert, I've seen the world map.
Yeah.
We're gonna park the United States Navy in the Persian Gulf?
Just about. Yeah.
How are you going to maneuver?
That's what I was telling you.
The Straits of Hormuz are as narrow as the damn Dardanelles.
Yes. Yeah.
How did that work out when the first Lord of the Admiralty, a little guy named Winston Churchill, wanted to march the Royal Navy past Gallipoli. How'd that go? I mean, just asking.
Yeah. Yep. It's bad. I mean, that's bad.
I mean, you know, they're 30 days out from getting on station, and we're going to park all of that in front of Iran and go, well, do you feel lucky?
Mm-hmm. And Russia has been kind of backing them because they were the ones supplying the fuel.
Bingo. So we've got Russia's attention diverted by our little client state, Georgia, so that Russia can't pay so much attention to what we're up to in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least John McCain's not flying off any of those carriers, so we don't have to worry about him blowing them up.
Well, the scary kind of thing is, I mean, you know how they stagger them. I mean, we're talking chess now. You know, you got a couple more moves to wait your turn.
Yeah.
But we already have probably at least two groups out there, and I mean.
Right. There's two on station, and there's two on station, and three on the way.
Yeah. So it's, you know, if you can start it with the two, you know, you got the three in reserve. You know, China's got the Olympics to deal with.
They're busy.
This is why this is bad and scary. I mean,
yeah, they're busy rounding up their dissidents and their homeless people and stuff. And
oh, true. They need fertilizer.
So, you know, it's just another one of those days where I like the sound of a newspaper shaking open. I think that's a sound effect we need with like websites and news stories. Of a physical newspaper. That's what happens when you shake the newspaper open on a Monday morning. Oh, look, we've sent the entire United States Navy to one of the narrowest waterways on the entire planet. Aren't we smart?
Mm-hmm. And Iran, I told you, they have all those missiles.
No, they got the missiles, they got the supersonic torpedoes.
The supersonic missiles that zigzag and can target carriers.
And by the way, you know, all those guided missile destroyers and fast frigates and stuff, how thick's the armor plating on those hulls? I mean, we're not talking about USS New Jersey armor plating here.
No.
Just, you know, for the folks, you know.
Well, plus the metal gets more expensive, you know.
Well, of course it does. We got to buy it from China.
Oh, it's a sick joke. It just is a sick joke. It just is. That's all of philosophy can be summed up with that.
But all of those carrier battle groups are sitting there just waiting for Israel to send the balloon up. Over a country that doesn't even have any nuclear weapons capability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But see, they've got hegemony in the region, and we can talk about, we can talk about whether they've got nuclear capability or not. Nuclear capability is the pretext. It's the Gulf of Tonkin reason. It's not because they don't have it. But what we do want to do is destabilize Iran, because we destabilized Iraq, which put Iran in the catbird seat, and now we got to fix that problem too. It's like what happens when you've got a mouse problem and you bring in the cats. And then you got a cat problem, and you have to bring in the dogs. And then you got a dog problem, so you got to bring in the lions. Then the lions get out of hand, and you got to bring in the elephants. The level of genius at work here, Albert, is positively stunning.
It is, unless the only way you could think that it's not sarcastically stunning is to really just think, what's the end game here? What's the purpose of doing
this? I don't think they do end games.
You know, I don't know.
It's perpetual war for perpetual peace. That's where we are now, Albert.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, my guts have been up in a uproar all weekend. So.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
This is, and now, yeah. and now you can't even be incorporated in the Big Ten?
Nope. So I'll just sit here up my holler and be glad to be here.
There you go. Also, you know, it might be for the best. You know, you might be able to get it on C-SPAN.
Well, I've had people write to me and say, you know, listen, Bob, I don't think you needed to be in Denver. And that may be true. You know, who knows? Maybe there's an alternative universe where, you know, Recreate 68 or whatever really gets their nasty going and really ramps up the protests and so forth. And, of course, you know, you never know. The CIA might be out there trying to ramp up dissent and stuff and, you know, really recreate 1968.
Yeah, they don't do that, Bob. They never do anything like that.
And, you know, a fella might get trampled or something.
Yeah, you might just be the focal point for the time vortex to bring that timeline into this one. Oh, my goodness.
No, I really don't want to do any vortexing.
Oh, buddy, how are you going to do?
Yeah, I know. Well, Albert, you take it easy, brother.
You too, brother.
I'll talk.
I got you back.
All right. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Be good. Bye.
Later. Our buddy Albert, let's take a little brief musical interlude. If you're on hold, please stay that way. Don't go running away. But talking about all this Georgian business brought a little tune to mind. So you're listening to The Horn, America's liberal voice.
Now I've got my payment for the service that I gave. They've given me my ticket to this place beyond the grave. I suppose it's kind of funny, I suppose it's kind of sad, thinking back on all the times we had. But it's kind of hot and smoky in this empty room to hell, and I won't make up the story, 'cause you know the truth so well. It's much too late to worry that we never had a chance. And when Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance, dance, dance. When Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance. We all set off together on the sorry ship of state. When the captain took the fever, we were hijacked by the mate, and he steered us through the shadows upon an angry tide, and cast us one by one over the side. But it's kind of hot and smoky in this anteroom to hell, and I won't make up the story, 'cause you know the truth so well. Much too late to worry that we never had a chance. And when Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance, dance, dance. When Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance. Zenobia, Bukharin, and the rest. We're sharpening our pitchforks and we're heating up the ends. We've got a few surprises for the mate when he appears. I hope he likes the next few million years. And it's kind of hot and smoky in this empty room to hell, and I won't make up the story, 'cause you know the truth so well. It's much too late to worry that we never had a chance. And when Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance, dance, dance. When Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance.
Mm-hmm.
Lord, I love smart songwriting, and you know, there's no, as far as I'm concerned, there's no smarter songwriter than Al Stewart. But and I'm going right to the phones, but I just got to drive this point home, okay? Just to make sure that it's absolutely rock solid clear. Am I the only one who is impressed with the profound irony that we are backing a country in a war whose most noteworthy gift to the world up until recently was a fellow by the name of Yosif Vissarionovich Djugashvili? The rest of the world knew him as Joseph Stalin. We're backing, ouch, you know, just ouch. We are backing the country that sent Stalin to the world. Somehow or another, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if you figured, you know, it's the Bush administration, it's Cheney back there saying, go poke him again. Yeah, we'll give you 1,000 military advisors that rather be in Georgia than in Iraq in the first place. And there's a sort of historical continuity to all this that is just astonishing. And we'll go back to the phones, or not. Hold on. Nope, you both quit on me. Doggone it. And again, I mean, I'm sure that there are soldiers dying on both sides. The Georgians claim to have shot down 3 or 4 Soviet jets. I'm Soviet. Jesus. Bob. Welcome to the 21st century. Russian jets. They're probably Soviet-era jets, though, for that matter. They shot some of those down, so, you know, you got some dead people in uniforms. But by far, there are a lot more dead people out of uniforms. You know, dead grandmothers with no teeth and, you know, aprons and stuff. Yeah. Dead old grandfathers with 3 days' growth of stubble on their faces sitting on the sidewalk drinking tea. And maybe moving chess pieces about. Dead Ossetians, dead Georgians, dead Russians. And Dick Cheney giggling all the way to the bank. Now here's a real charmer, though. This happened yesterday during NBC's coverage of the Olympics. Oh, we're in D.C. We've got the Olympics and Notre Dame football. We're your home for sports. Not. Dear Leader took time out of his busy schedule to talk to Bob Costas. And Bob Costas, I think, has made it fairly plain that he's not a George Bush fan. But you just got to hear this exchange because it's...
This past week, you restated America's fundamental differences with China.
Yeah.
But given China's growing strength and America's own problems, realistically, how much leverage and influence does the U.S. have here?
First of all, I don't see America having problems. I see America as a nation that is a world leader that has got great values.
Oh, dear God. You know, sometimes I play these things mainly so that you can verify for me that I've heard what I've heard. Because that's... Holy...
First of all, I don't see America having problems. I see America as a nation that is a world leader that has got great values.
Oh, yeah, we're a real... Yeah, we got great values, but not what you're thinking, George. I mean, I realize you're thinking about your snowflake babies and the fact that we're protecting the little stem cells and the fetuses and so forth.
We got family value.
Yeah, I know. Because most of the states won't let the gay people get married. Yeah, we got good values. No.
America is a nation that is a world leader that has got great values. The only way we've got great values is it's like that brand name, like Great Value. Because the rest of the world is buying us up piecemeal because you've wrecked us, George, you damn jackass. Yeah, I don't see America having problems. Well, but then again, you've never seen a gas pump. Dick. I don't see America having problems. Well, you know, maybe you ought to get out more, George. Maybe you ought to take that media filter off for a little bit and see the America that you have made. See working families that are working two and three jobs and looking for the fourth and fifth because it ain't work. It's not keeping it. And to see the families thrown out on the street by the housing crisis and you don't even want to do anything about that. Well, the free market will correct itself. What a... I mean, did I miss it? Did we move the White House to the moon? I mean, where is he that he... I don't see America having problems. What the hell? There are 50 million people in this country who, when they get sick, can't go to the damn doctor. How many thousands of jobs got added, or people, names got added to the jobless rolls last month? That economic stimulus miracle we were expecting? Well, some people were, I wasn't. It didn't quite pan out. You got Citigroup buying back bad investments that they sold, it was a fraud bunko scheme to begin. I don't see America having any problems. Damn! This beggars comprehension. Yeah, we don't have any problems. And see, that's a way to avoid talking about the stuff that Bob Costas... Because Bob Costas asked him a hard question. This past week, you restated America's fundamental differences with China. But given China's growing strength and America's own problems, realistically, how much leverage does the U.S. have here? And see, if George Bush was an honest man instead of a pig-eyed, jug-eared lout, the answer to that is none! They've got all the leverage. They've got the manufacturing sector that we used to have. They've got the steel mills. They've got the bad debt that I hung on them for the last 8 years. And if I'd have said that here in China, they probably would have rounded me up and accused me of being a Falun Gong and took my kidneys or something. We don't have any leverage with China. But God forbid that President Dingleberry for brains would say something substantive. Holy smokes. I don't see America having problems. You got to wonder in his sort of home on the range world where never is heard a discouraging word, what would constitute a problem? I don't know, maybe if his hateful, beastly old mother got tangled up in her pearls or something. Right, that'd be a problem. When mother has a bad day, we all have a bad day. Dang, come. Now let's go to the phones. Here we go. Hey, welcome back.
Well, I have to say, there's a great photo of George. I don't know if you've seen it with the volleyball team member.
Yeah, what the hell is that? I did see that.
The one that I'm particularly looking at is
where he's like about to give the volleyball player a spanking or something.
No, the one that I was looking at looked like he was making a war map for Tehran on her back.
Yeah, right.
That one.
You've been a naughty volleyball player. Very naughty.
I've just been informed that there's actual video of, since I'm not watching the Olympics, there's actual video of Bush and Putin laughing together at the Olympics.
Lord.
I don't know if it's true, but...
Well, they're old buddies. I mean, he's looked into his soul.
I don't know. I think they showed it on the TV a few times or something. There's probably footage of it on YouTube or something. I mainly just called to pay my respects to...
Isaac Hayes?
Well, yeah, one of the greatest music geniuses of our time. Bob, if you don't have a hot buttered soul, I'm going to revoke your Southern card, by the way. Do you have the album?
I don't think I have had it in the past.
Okay.
But it's probably
you have to have the following Isaac Hayes albums to be a Southerner. You have to have I've looked it up. You have to have Hot Buttered Soul. You have to have Isaac Hayes Movement to be continued, and the Shaft soundtrack.
Oh, it's just. Hot Buttered Soul was groundbreaking stuff. I mean, it changed the shape of R&B and pop. It was amazing.
Yeah, and the one thing that a lot of people don't mention.
You know, there's no Hot Buttered Soul. There's no Barry White later. You know.
Yeah, one album that a lot of people don't mention. They always get stuck on Shaft, and by the time I get to Phoenix, but Black Moses is tremendous.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, you've heard it?
What? Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's an amazing a mix of songs.
I just can't figure out where the I can't figure out where the Scientology part plays in.
I think it has to do with the fact that was raised as an orphan, I think. Or he was raised without his parents.
Yeah, he was raised by his grandparents, yeah.
Yeah. And also I think it has to do with the fact that he had several marriages that didn't work out. And then when you are ousted to be a king among kings and you're taking away that status, even though when he did go to Ghana, they said they would pull out albums literally and show him, and they made him an honorary king in Ghana. But I think it has a lot to do with the fact of when you get older, you look for something that is an absolute truth or an enlightening truth, and I think Isaac was looking in was looking pretty much in the wrong place because he was hanging around Hollywood too much, and probably a lot of things are going wrong in his life regarding family or something. And usually that's what it takes to make people bend to Scientology, because Jesus isn't answering their prayers, so someone else has to. So why not Xanu?
Oh, God. No, not Xanu. No, it's too early. It's too early in the week for Xanu.
You know, one song that nobody really plays on the radio, but they should.
What's that?
Is Isaac Hayes. I've mentioned this before on this program. His version of "Windows of the World." On the lake. See, a lot of people don't have this album because it's the live album, the Tahoe, Lake Tahoe, and it's a great. He does a great intro and sets it up beautifully, and you can't get it on any other album except that live album. And he never made a studio version of it. And it's really, you know, Bob, if you really can find it, it's an appropriate song to play for everything that's going on with the world, especially with the intro of how he sets it up. And it's an amazing Bert Bacharach How David piece. And a lot of people, they don't, a lot of people, they would, they're not really familiar with it. They're familiar with, like, Walk On By and Santa Fe and all of that, San Jose. But that piece of song is so relevant and so poignant. You just can't go wrong with it. You don't hear it on the radio. It says everything you need to hear about in the world. He says in the beginning, "What if the world, because the windows of the world are dirty and used and abused, and we there's so much pain and suffering, we can't see through it." It's one of those types of moments where you just sit back and you go, "Wow, Isaac owns this song now." The orchestra does a really good job with it, and like I said, it's not on the other album except the Live at Lake Tahoe album.
You know, it's amazing the number of people that were exposed to Isaac Hayes' work as a direct result of what he did with South Park.
Yeah, I think a lot of people picked up the Shaft soundtrack in turn, and they probably just picked up the essentials, probably the very best of. But you really can't beat those six albums, which is also Truck Turner is good too. A lot of people don't reference Truck Turner. Truck Turner is another example of them.
Oddly enough, we were talking, and it got mentioned entirely too briefly toward the end of the program on Friday evening. Our buddy David in Tennessee had called in to talk about what had been done to Steve Cohen in the primary election. Steve Cohen being the member of Congress representing the district in Memphis in Shelby County, Tennessee, from which it was Harold Ford Jr.'s old seat, and he was absolutely treated as shabbily. And I mean, it was just nasty, dirty, vile race baiting that came from his opponent, who put out a flyer that said Steve Cohen's a Jew and the Jews hate Jesus and the Jews hate Christians. And apparently it really backfired on her because she got her ass beat by Steve Cohen in the primary, which was a good thing. But we discussed that on Friday evening, David. And then lo and behold, today I will now have referenced all three of our network Davids on a David phone call. So, you know, this may be a first. Then David from South Carolina sends me a flyer that had come from Steve Cohen that showed a picture of him and Isaac Hayes and the fact that Isaac Hayes had endorsed him for that in that congressional race. So, Scientology or not, I'm willing to look. It's hard to look past the Scientology with somebody like Tom Cruise,
well, you know,
or John Travolta. There's such a pre-existing body of work with Isaac Hayes that exists outside Scientology that I can get past that pretty quick with him.
Oh, without question. Speaking of contributions, a lot of people don't realize this, but they should know this, that Isaac Hayes was a essential element in bringing the soul reissues to the forefront in the music industry. And the reason why I did that was because he was the only one who was playing soul music at the time on FM radio, which was when he was on Kiss FM. He was a DJ. And a lot of people don't realize that when he stopped doing the performing or stopped recording for a while, he became a DJ at Kiss FM. And his mission was to bring back old soul. And then that is what kicked the major labels in the pants to reissue a lot of the soul classics, made Rhino and everyone else fall into line, because there was people were getting the feedback and the response that these needed to come out really fairly quickly. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
With closing, it's important to realize of the fact that whenever you hear Isaac Hayes or an Isaac Hayes number in particular, you're hearing like he didn't just make a song, he turned it into an epic, and everything that, whether it was a Kris Kristofferson number or Burt Bacharach or Norman Whitfield or Curtis Mayfield's I Stand Accused. Isaac always had something to bring to the world of song, and he didn't see color, he didn't see genre. And most importantly, he put it all together in a way that was universal for anyone to be listening to it to be affected by it. So that's an important artist if people haven't checked it out. And he wasn't just a an accomplished arranger and vocalist. He was also a great musician on the saxophone and keyboards. And he really knew how to, I gotta tell you, a lot of people, the other thing they should listen to is the Live at Wattstax album, which is an amazing example of how he could control the crowd. He really was, Moses. A lot of people don't realize that Isaac Hayes got into, his solo career by an accident. Because of what happened was a bet.
Yeah, he won a talent contest at a bar or something, didn't he?
That's part of it.
But singing a tune, I can't remember the name of the tune, but it was a tune by Nat King Cole, a Nat King Cole standard.
Well, the way he started his solo career was Donald Dunn challenged Isaac while he was drunk to just do stuff off the top of his head at this party, at the Stax Records party that they were having. They said, play the piano, Isaac. And they turned the tape on, and that was the first album presenting Isaac Hayes. And that album flopped, but then when they realized that Isaac could be a star, and when they were about to make his second album, he had no idea that he was going to be a solo artist. It was just designed in the stars for someone from the MGs like Donald Dunn to push him in the direction. So if it wasn't for Donald Dunn, you wouldn't have had presenting Isaac Hayes, and then you wouldn't have had Hot Buttered Soul, and then you wouldn't have had that movement. Really, also the prototype to disco started on the 16th notes on the hi-hat with Shaft. A lot of people, if you ask a lot of producers what they were listening to, they'll tell you, oh yeah, that Shaft record, that was a tremendous example of early disco dance music that was taken and then run with it. I'm sure Barry White and the Love Unlimited Orchestra, they were listening at the time, and they picked up stuff that Isaac was doing. So yeah, for those people who don't have the Isaac Hayes albums, Black Moses, Hot Buttered Soul, Isaac Hayes Movement, Live at Lake Tahoe, To Be Continued. You can't go wrong with that. And then add to the fact of his stuff with Carla Thomas and Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, and then Wilson Pickett. You're looking at, they did over, I think, 200 songs at Stax, Hayes and Porter. So you're looking at two different legacies there. You're looking at the Hayes and Porter songwriting legacy, and then you're looking at the legacy as a solo artist and his reinterpretations of pop standards and R&B favorites.
Now, I forget. David, did he make the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I believe he did. I believe he did.
Something in my mind says yeah, but I wasn't sure offhand.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this whole thing is that Isaac Hayes, and then you have Bernie Mac, who I consider one of the great comedians, brought everything down to the simple basics that everyone could relate to, and such a great timing as well. What's interesting is the fact that Isaac Hayes and Bernie Mac and Samuel Jackson just finished a movie together called Soul Man.
Really?
So, so that's going to be interesting to see how Samuel Jackson plays that one out and when they promote the movie. It's a lot different when you lose two of the main people instead of one, like with Batman. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of downside to Hayes dying at this time. One of it was the fact that Stax was just a had just selected the band members for the new album. He was about to come full circle, and I believe in the full circle philosophy. He was back on his home, Stax Records, and he died in Memphis. So he didn't die in L.A., people. He died in Memphis. So there's something to it, the way he died, the season that he died, just everything. There is something. I don't know if you call it spiritual or divine or whatever, but whatever the reason was, he wasn't meant to make that the album Stax. He was just meant to come home, I guess.
Yeah, you could make that argument. Well, David, thank you very much.
No problem, Bob.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, later.
Bye now. And David is absolutely correct. Hot Buttered Soul is simply, it's one of those definitive albums. Ah, doggone it. Sorry, lost you. You were on hold, but I lost you. So, where do we go in the next hour? Well, I'll tell you where I was. There's a couple of places that I think we need to go. So we'll take a little break, and based on David's mention, we'll have a little we'll take a little break and play a little music. Come back with hour two, a little bit of a late start. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to the conversation radio that you make happen. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be right back.
Chechen.
What's up, my friend? She's a complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.
Gotcha.
Your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty, about 20 minutes past the hour. And of course, as ever, your comments, your thoughts are welcome. And I wanted to share a couple of things with you. Couple of emails. The first one being one that I saw when I got up Saturday, stumbled into the studio, popped up a decaf in my hand. I love emails like this. I think anybody who does this kind of thing would have to. Validation is refreshing. This particular email says, Bob, sitting here in London listening to the show on Saturday morning. Breath of fresh air. A friend had her kids at London Zoo last week. There was a show about animals that leap and fly. And the keeper was showing a lemur's hands. How they were very like human hands, oppositional thumbs and all of that. And how they must have had a common evolutionary ancestor millions of years back. At which point, three American families got up and left, virtually covering their kids' ears. Glad to hear they're not representative. Or are they? And that's from Ian in London. That's a tough call to make, Ian. Are they representative? I guess the statistics indicate that easily at least half of the American population believes that some sort of invisible cloud critter made himself some invisible cloud critter hands and picked up a lump of clay and shaped it into a sort of Gumby-esque proto-human whom he named Adam, who turned out to be lonesome, how can you be lonesome if you don't know you're alone? Well, never mind. So turned out to be lonesome, so then he slipped Adam an early proto-Mickey and pulled one of his ribs out without Adam noticing, and got another lump of clay and formed it around that rib bone and made this Gumby-esque proto-human called Eve. No, really. 50% of the American population believe that crap. And it is crap. It is crap if it is taken as a literal description of how creation, how Earth came to be and people came to inhabit the Earth. It's crap. Now, it's not crap if it is a creation myth, if it is understood as myth, then it's not crap. But as this, it's crap. And yeah, 50% of the American people at least believe that crap. So are they representative? You could make the argument that they are. Sorry, I wish it was my family that had been sitting there, because we would have just eaten that stuff up. Because there are rational Americans. They tend not to be Republicans. They tend not to be fundamentalists. But they also tend to sort of have to hide because you don't believe God made it. Don't you know Jesus is your personal Lord and Savior? How can you know Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior if you believe that we evolved? And I've taken to looking at those people and saying, listen, okay, you don't believe in evolution. That's fine. Evolution's a knowledge thing, not a belief thing. But if you want to treat it like Tinkerbell, Santa Claus, and the Easter Bunny, that's fine. You don't believe in evolution. But do me a favor. Do not get a flu shot next year, nor any of your family. Just don't, because those are evolutionary biology based. And next time you or your little ones get sick, don't go to the doctor, because everything in medical science is based on, there you go again, evolutionary biology. Instead, have someone pray and lay hands on your sick children. Maybe they'll get well. But you'd have a better chance with it. But you don't believe in evolution. So, Ian, I wish that wasn't representative. And I can only imagine the chuckling that took place among the enlightened others who stayed for the presentation. Thank you very much, Ian, for your correspondence, and chime in anytime. We love to hear from folks listening to the horn, even if you can't listen live and you listen at another time. You can still get your say in one way or the other. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Alan.
Hey, Alan, how are you?
Pretty good. Haven't been listening to you much. Today I brought my laptop down to the pier, and I'm listening to you on a pier on the lake.
Oh, where are you? If you don't mind me asking, where are you?
North Carolina. It's called Saluda. It's real close to Asheville.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Oh, yeah, it's real nice. Hey, I was talking to my sister today, and she said that Barack Obama was a Muslim.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. How would you answer something like that?
You can start with the basic, no, he's not.
Yeah, that's what I did.
You can also say, all right, you can ask, how did you feel about Reverend Wright's comments? Oh, blah, 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 and they'll go off. And you say, so, right, he was a member of the Trinity United Church of Christ for 20 years. But he's a Muslim. Pick one. You can't have both. He's either a secret Muslim or he is a member of a radical America-hating church. You can't have both. You just can't. So, you know, pick one.
Oh, that would have been a good argument. I love that. I don't know.
You know, you can go into detail and point out that the whole Barack Obama is a Muslim thing was ginned up on Free Republic, that it is a... It is a piece of garbage wholesale.
Yeah, it's swift voting again.
Yeah, and that it originated with Free Republic and the usual right wing hate mongers. But depending on the attitude of the person involved, that may not make much of a difference, because facts are not something with which the Obama slimers are very much involved.
I know it. I try to tell her, what about the issues? I try to tell her that if McCain gets in office, then all the lies about going to war will be swept under the rug. And also about spying on us illegally will be swept under the rug. And then she says, well, I don't care if I'm spied on. They're just trying to find terrorists. Oh, are you still in your seat?
Yeah, it's... I don't, honest to God, Alan, I don't, I'm not discounting any particular relation of yours. I'm speaking generally. I don't know if you can talk to these people. They may be, because see, they're not using the knowledge function of their brain. It's what I said a few minutes ago. They're believing. They're giving it the Tinkerbell treatment, if you know what I mean. You know, if we only believe, it'll be real. Knowledge, not so much.
Yeah, they just like to talk of Fox News and all that. They try to make everything look all right. As long as you vote for daddy Republicans, are going to take care of you with their big corporations.
So, well, exactly.
That's what they're thinking. Have you been checking the news lately? There's an issue out there, an article out today. I found it on Common Dreams.
I'm sorry, you broke up some, Alan. You want to try repeat that, please?
Said ice in the north.
Oh yeah, the Northwest Passage will be completely open in a matter of weeks for the first time, for all we know, ever.
The article I found is in the Guardian, and all the so I think the environment is going to make the system even look like minuscule. It's going to be so bad.
There are things that could and may very well happen that we have not begun to contemplate. The North Atlantic conveyor current, if that thing shuts down, we're talking about dramatically colder winters for both North America and Europe. The implications are profound and they're frightening. But, you know, we've got a half of the country that just wants to stick their head in the sand and say, well, if it gets colder, that's God's will. And then if it gets colder, they'll say, well, see, there ain't no global warming.
Yeah, but that'll be caused by.
But that'll be caused by global warming. I mean, it doesn't mean that everybody's heat bill goes down and their air conditioning bill goes up. And that's one of the problems that you run across when you try to explain science things to people who want to do all of their stuff by believing.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been better if they called it global climate change.
Or global climate catastrophe. That works for me.
Yeah. There's another article the other day saying that the temperature is going to be up by so many centigrades, which would equal out to about 10 degrees Fahrenheit. So happens, it could make it even much faster.
It doesn't take much change at all, Alan, to make some parts of this country, this planet, utterly uninhabitable. You know, when you start talking about the salinization of soil, when you start talking about erosion issues, the Great Loess Plateau of China is an erosion nightmare. Between erosion, salinization of the soil, all these things that are coming for are, we can do something about it if we might be able to do something about it if we get busy right now. But sitting and waiting and having very well informed policy debates by, committees and so forth, no, that time has passed.
Yeah, we got to listen to the real scientists, not the ones paid off by the oil companies.
And the coal companies. You know, bear in mind, if you should happen to swing through West Virginia at any time, Alan, you will see billboards put up by Walker Caterpillar, and they sell most of their junk to mountaintop removal operations, that says, coal, the clean, green, carbon-neutral energy source. Coal. Yes, coal. Billboards all over West Virginia.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, and it's enough to make you run off the road.
Well, if the temperature goes up 10 degrees because of pollution that they're creating, they're not going to have many friends. There's a lot of people going to turn on them.
And there's even a petition, and I need to find that the petition link, so that I can share it with everybody in the audience so they can go sign. We're trying to get the Attorney General of West Virginia to actually to actually investigate these ads as being deliberate acts of consumer fraud.
Sounds like, of course it is.
Yeah.
Well.
So.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you talking to me.
Oh, it's entirely my pleasure and always.
Okay. I'll be listening when I get a reception.
All right. Yeah. Sometimes that can be a little bit dodgy, but enjoy where you are and when you are, and let us know. Stay in touch when you're able to.
Okay. All right.
All right. You take care, Al.
All right.
Bye now. We used to call him Alan the Trucker, but he quit trucking, so I think he's going to be Alan the Painter because he's a heck of a good painter. So you know, there's that. I just got another email in from our pal Sandra. She said, just tuning in, have you made any comments about Russia? How sad that the president of Georgia thought the U.S. would come to his aid. No chance of that. Have a great show. Well, we couldn't if we wanted to. We're stretched so thin that we don't have the people to do it. Yeah, you know, you got the 1,000 military advisors we sent you. You made the best of that, and good luck! But, no, it's a depressing situation. It just is. It's depressing because this is the kind of war in which there is no winner. But we're doing it, you know, we're letting this thing hot up and gin up, as I said, for very, very specific, cynical, geopolitical reasons. Because if Russia is occupied with the Georgians, they'll be harder pressed to screw with us while we screw with Iran. See how it works? Just makes you feel so good, doesn't it? Just yum. And another email we got in from our buddy Tom out in California. He said, I've often heard people say that the growing divisions in this country could become like the Civil War, pitting brother against brother. I now find myself approaching that situation. Thought you might like to read a letter I sent my right-wing brother in response to his gratuitous trashing of unions. Now bear in mind, I've never been a union member and I own my own business, but I'm not so blind that I can't see that I've benefited tremendously from their efforts. And he gives me permission to share his letter to his brother with you, and it's a beauty, and I'm gonna. He said, you made some very strange comments blaming various ills of the country. He's talking about a get-together that he had with his brother and his sister-in-law. So, you made some very strange comments blaming various ills of the country on labor unions. This is patently absurd. Labor unions have done an incalculable amount of good for all of us, including you, and I'm offended by your ignorance and your blind parroting of right-wing talking points that have no basis in reality. Labor union membership during the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s in the private workforce in the U.S. held steady at around 25%, and this in large part was what built the American middle class, whose benefits you are so willing to share. Now, after 28 years of the repig-licking war on the middle class, yes, that's since the misbegotten election of your St. Ronald of Reagan, who pushed through, if you will recall, the largest tax increase in American history, and the next year stole the money thus generated to cover up his fiscal disaster, union membership is at 7%. Now, how in the hell can you blame anything on unions in 2008? Oh, by the way, real wages have declined steadily since 1980. Actually, since 1970. But since 1980, even during the administration of Bill Clinton, the best Republican president since Eisenhower. Was the economy steadily in the tank from World War II to 1980? Of course not. Were American corporations constantly going bankrupt in that time? No. Were the very wealthy becoming impoverished? No, they were steadily becoming richer. Were the poorest Americans doing steadily better and gradually moving into the middle class? Yes, blame that on unions. What is a union? Specifically, a labor union. It is, I would submit, a constitutionally protected assembly or association of workers. You have a problem with that? Get over it. What's a corporation? It is, I would submit, a constitutionally protected assembly of people with money, or capital, or in other words, a union! For some reason, you seem to believe that one kind of union is good while another kind of union is bad. When aggregated capital wants something from labor, it has one tool, to withhold money. When aggregated labor wants something from a corporation, it has one tool to withhold its labor. Are all unions pure as the driven snow? Of course not. Are all corporations ethical and without scandal? Not hardly. I would suggest that by any rational measure, dollar amount, number of cases, number of people defrauded, corporate corruption has outweighed union corruption by several orders of magnitude. Enron. The savings and loan scandal, in which your boy old 894 McCain was one of the Keating Five, and on and on. I would even allow that corporate unions are not inherently more corrupt than labor unions, although they are inherently autocratic, while labor unions are inherently democratic. But large corporations sure as hell have more political power due to their extensive use of legalized bribery in the form of campaign contributions. After all, money is by definition their stock in trade. The huge influence of large corporations over our government is the greatest threat to our democratic, small-d, democratic republic. Brother, you have been living in a right-wing, extremist, corporatist echo chamber for so long, you don't even realize that you used to be a decent person. The following was written by John Gray, and it is about you. Please read it, and then go look in the mirror, figuratively, of course. And I love this piece, and it's worth resharing. Joe gets up at 6 a.m. and fills his coffee pot with water to prepare his morning coffee. The water is clean and good because some tree-hugging liberal fought for minimum water quality standards. With his first swallow of water, he takes his daily medication. His medications are safe to take because some stupid commie liberal fought to ensure their safety and that they work as advertised. All but $10 of his medications are paid for by his employer's medical plan because some liberal union workers fought their employers for paid medical insurance, and now Joe gets it too. He prepares his morning breakfast, bacon and eggs. Joe's bacon is safe to eat because some girly man liberal fought for laws to regulate the meatpacking industry. In the morning shower, Joe reaches for his shampoo. His bottle is properly labeled with each ingredient and its amount in the total contents because some crybaby liberal fought for his right to know what he was putting on his body and how much it contained. Joe dresses, walks outside, and takes a deep breath. The air he breathes is clean because some environmentalist wacko liberal fought for the laws to stop industries from polluting our air. He walks on the government-provided sidewalk to subway station for his government-subsidized ride to work. It saves him considerable money in parking and transportation fees because some fancy-pants liberal fought for affordable public transportation which gives everyone the opportunity to be a contributor. Joe begins his workday. He has a good job with excellent pay, medical benefits, retirement, paid holidays, and vacation because some lazy liberal union members fought and died for these working standards. Joe's employer pays these standards because Joe's employer doesn't want his employees to call the union. If Joe is hurt on the job or becomes unemployed, he'll get worker compensation or unemployment because some stupid liberal didn't think he should lose his home because of his temporary misfortune. It's noontime now, and Joe needs to make a bank deposit so he can pay some bills. Joe's deposit is federally insured by the FSLIC because some godless liberal wanted to protect Joe's money from unscrupulous bankers who ruined the banking system before the Great Depression. Joe has to pay his Fannie Mae underwritten mortgage and his below-market federal student loan because some elitist liberal decided that Joe and the government would be better off if he was educated and earned more money over his lifetime. Joe also forgets that, in addition to his federally subsidized student loans, he attended a state-funded university. The day is done and Joe is home from work. He plans to visit his father this evening at his farm home in the country. He gets in his car for the drive. His car is among the safest in the world because some America-hating liberal fought for car safety standards to go along with the taxpayer-funded roads. He arrives at his boyhood home. His was the third generation to live in the house financed by Farmers Home Administration because bankers didn't want to make rural loans. The house didn't have electricity until some big government liberal stuck his nose where it didn't belong and demanded rural electrification. He's happy to see his father, who's now retired. His father lives on Social Security and a union pension because some wine-drinking, cheese-eating liberal made sure he could take care of himself so Joe wouldn't have to. Joe gets back in his car for the ride home and turns on a radio talk show. The radio host keeps saying that liberals are bad and conservatives are good. He doesn't mention that the beloved Republicans have fought against every protection and benefit Joe enjoys throughout his day. Joe agrees. We don't need those big government liberals ruining our lives. After all, I'm a self-made man who believes everyone should take care of themselves, just like I have. And Tom says in his correspondence, I challenge you to turn off Fox News, the voice of the American Fascist Party. Go a month without listening to Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, Savage, and the rest of that filthy crowd. For a breath of fresh air, try listening to some patriotic radio for a change. Try the Tom Hartman program on your local station, KPOJ AM 620, from 9 to noon. Maybe you'll stop hating everything that made this country great. Now be advised that this is decidedly not liberal radio. If you want to try some of that, try Head On with Bob Kincaid on HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Maybe you'll realize how far off the edge you have gone. And that's the kind of stuff that will, in fact, change America. And it is tough, and it does make you feel like you're in direct conflict with your own family and your own loved ones. And you look over and you go, who are you? And when did you put the pot under my brother's bed? Do I know you? And it's tough, and it's painful, and it hurts. But it's worth it. It's worth it just to start the conversation. Because if you start the conversation, then there's at least a fighting chance, a puncher's chance, as the saying goes. That through the dialogue, you can begin to dispel the fog and shine a little sanitizing light on the right-wing propaganda that has just been, I got to thinking about Hamlet. I did. Because if you remember in Shakespeare's Hamlet, Hamlet finds out from his father's ghost how it is that he was killed, how it is that he was murdered. And it turns out that Hamlet the Elder, who was king of the Danes, was napping in his garden one day when his brother Claudius came along and poured poison in his ears. And that was how Hamlet the Elder was murdered. I think Shakespeare chose that method of the delivery of poison as a reason. I mean, you know, why not have him come up and, smother him with a pillow? We don't have any guns at the time, so come up and slit his throat. Why not? Yeah. But no. Shakespeare makes it clear that Claudius poisoned Hamlet the Elder in order to get power. Oh, God, it's so good and it's so relevant for now. Claudius poisoned Hamlet the Elder in order to seize Hamlet the Elder's kingdom by pouring poison in his ear. What has the right wing done to this country? They have seized the power of the people. They have seized the power of we, the people of the United States, by pouring poison in a sleeping America's ears. That poison comes from Michael Savage. It comes from Sean Hannity. It comes from Glenn Beck. It comes from Limbaugh. It comes from Bortz. It comes from O'Reilly, Mark Levin, that Gallagher guy. It comes in waves of poison that just flood the American ears. And sure enough, just like Claudius took power from Hamlet, it has enabled a bunch of thugs to steal power from the people. Nah, that hit me the other day, and I'm still just rocked with it. The idea, because I'm sure Shakespeare saw much the same thing going on in his own age, because it was the Elizabethan age, and there were people who were trying. You know, remember there were Jesuit hit squads that were sent under direct commission from the Pope to murder Elizabeth I. I mean, that's not myth. That's not made up. That's just history. You can't Tinkerbell it. Now, I don't believe that. What you believe doesn't matter a damn, because it did happen. The Pope at Rome literally put a price on Elizabeth I's head. And there were a lot of people pouring poison into English ears at that time, trying to seize power away from Elizabeth Rex. So I can't help but nothing. There is nothing. Ecclesiastes, is it? There is nothing new under the sun. Put the poison in by the ear, and you can. And there's no end to what you can accomplish. You can pour the poison down a family's ears, so that when they're able to afford a trip across the Atlantic, and they're standing at the London Zoo, and they see the amazing little tiny hand, almost like a baby's hand, of a lemur, and they hear someone say that we are evolutionarily kin to the lemur, they can stop up their ears, because you don't want the medicine going in that will cure the poison, and you run away. Is there any doubt that Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Michael Savage poured poison into the ears of Jim David Adkison before he got his 12-gauge sawed-off shotgun and went in and started blowing away people inside the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church? It was practically running out of his ears, the poison was, by the time he chambered the shells and started the shooting. Example after example after example. Or maybe it's not violence. Maybe it's what Tom was describing, a situation with a family where all they've heard for 20 long blessed years is that liberals is ruining America. My friends, the liberals are trying to... It's not even worth mimicking. But it is sure God. It is as sure as God made little green apples poison in American ears. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, Bob.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'm being able to listen to you of late, and it cuts in and out, but I'm hearing you. I still can't go on the chat room, but I think I have to wonder, as I'm hearing you speak today, there is like the hope that you could somehow reason with people that listen to the Fox News and Rush and somehow make them rethink. Are they really... getting an objective bite of truth. I don't think that happens. I I sit in on the discussion group periodically here, and one member who listens to those stations all the time, his main concern is that members of the board of directors, the chairman and the board of the petroleum companies, has to pay taxes. Not really troubles them. You know, and I suspect this guy makes a few bucks less than they do, and he probably pays taxes too. I don't see them capable of objective reason. I don't see them being able to hear an opposing view and consider it. I don't know why, but I throw it out for you. Do you feel they can?
Yeah. Trying to understand, Dave, why most of, you know, what am I trying to say here? CEOs don't directly elect Republican office holders.
No, they have to sell a lot of people. There are not enough CEOs of profit special interest to get 1% of the...
I mean, look, here's John McCain. Okay, here's old 894, Dave. Old 894 says, I'm going to end the earmarks, my friends. We're not going to have any more pork barrel spending in Washington.
This is one of the Keating Five, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true, yes. And meanwhile, however, the guy opposes all form of farm subsidies. Now, I oppose farm subsidies for, you know, the giant macro farmers, if you will. But for, you know, for somebody farming 100 acres in Iowa or Indiana or Kansas, I believe in helping. All right? Now, John McCain opposes all farm subsidies, however. Now, you explain to me how that small family farmer in Indiana or Kansas or Iowa or Nebraska, how is that sucker going to walk into a voting booth and cast a ballot for John McCain? He'll be putting a dagger in his own heart, Dave.
Yeah.
And he'll do it willfully.
Well, they have a way of making you think that what they're doing is in your best interest. They make you think that, you know, like I'm sure there are billionaire John Mansville farm industries. They receive profit welfare. They're making in the billions every year. But they are not going to be excluded from corporate welfare in a John McCain or George Bush administration. They'll get it. Actually, if you only owned a half dozen acres and you're working it with a mechanical plow, planting things manually and picking them, you could use a little help. You're not going to get it. Not from this administration. You know that. If there's going to be any aid, it's going to be for the people that Bush calls his day, the billionaires.
Right, yeah. The haves and the have-nores.
That's why I'm really kind of find myself banging my head on the wall, because right now, this conflict between Russia and Georgia, the Bush administration is jumping in saying Russia is way out of line and abusing their powers. And I think they are. And yet, my God, if Bush administration isn't jumping in with Russia and saying, and I gotta wonder, am I seeing this thing wrong?
No. You're seeing it complete. You're seeing it completely normally and rationally, Dave. It's just that to see it completely normally and rationally, anytime you observe the Bush administration and you look at it normally and rationally, you wind up feeling like you're standing on your head looking at it.
I gotta think, you know, something is. I'm missing something here.
Yeah, Russia's abusing its power. The pot meet kettle. I mean, it's that plain. But again, you know, it's at least my take on it is that there is a very good reason that we are, you know, we're just using Georgia as another client state. We're using it to divert the attentions and the powers and the resources of Russia away from any possibility of messing with us while we mess with Iran.
Yes, there is that. But, you know, Russia is also a force that can be brought to play in the U.S.-Iran game.
But not so much if they're very, very busy dealing with some very ferocious fighting folk.
Well, I understand Georgia doesn't have an Air Force, and they don't have much of a Navy. And, they may have some people with rifles on the ground, but when it comes to today's warfare, Georgia is not about to...
Well, they've been able to shoot down some Russian aircraft, so, you know, they're not entirely helpless. I'm sure they did that with munitions supplied by some American arms merchant in league with the Bush administration. I have no doubt of that. We've done business with them. We've talked about how good our relationship is. You know, our good friend Georgia. You know, remember, we're paying the freight to ship their troops back home from Iraq to Georgia.
Don't you wonder, you feel yourself, I mean, I do, I am on the same side as the Bush administration in this particular area. And that's never happened before. I can think of nothing that they have been on the right side of anything in my
Well, and they're not this time either, Dave, because while it is true that Georgia aggressed into South Ossetia, President Saakashvili declared a ceasefire and then attacked South Ossetia during it, prompting the Russian response. Now, the Russian response is sort of typical. You've done this once, and we're going to try to make sure you never do it again. They're going to try to absolutely grind Georgia under their boots, so that they can never be a threat again, and there will be horrors, and there will be war crimes, but it's another day in the neighborhood. It's how those conflicts are resolved. So now the Russians have driven, for the most part, driven the Georgians out of South Ossetia, and now they themselves are driving into the heart of Georgia. Again, with the goal of crushing, absolutely crushing, any ability that Georgia might have to do this twice.
And the Bush people are talking like, you're out of line, Russia, and we may get militarily involved if you don't back off.
But we're already militarily involved. We sent 1,000 military advisors to Georgia in the last year or so. We've provided materiel, provided materiel support, we've provided manpower support, we've provided teaching and training and know-how. Sure, we're already involved.
Well, if I, and I'm thinking you, Bob, find ourselves siding with the Bush administration in anything that's trying to make...
No, but I don't. This is such a cynical, see, there's diplomacy, and then there's what the Bush administration does. And the Bush administration sees all its problems as nails, and therefore sees all its solutions as hammers. And they're all sledgehammers. I mean, they swat gnats with sledgehammers, they swat flies with sledgehammers, and they don't care if the gnat is on a stained glass window when they do it. All right? So
instead of a hammer, there's a fly on baby's head.
Right, exactly. And that's what this is. Rather than engage, you know, rather than encouraging diplomacy, no, hell no. No, we're just going to take the sledgehammer. I can't help reiterating this, Dave. It is very, very, very cynical what we're doing. It is hateful what we're doing. Because we're not doing this because of any, we're going to protect the Georgians' freedom. I'm particularly fond of Savannah. Yeah, no. No, that's not any of this. I mean, that might be the rhetoric that's used as cover, but the main purpose is to tie up Russia so that we can go and act with impunity with regard to Iran. Because Russia was the primary force standing in the way of us starting the slaughter in Iran.
That's going to play a part in it, then, doesn't it? That's going to have some part to play in it. Tie them up dealing with their Georgia problem. And, I think a lot of world opinion is going to say you're out of line, Russia, on this one. I haven't heard much.
Well, it's just, you know, the Russians are so much bigger and so much stronger than the Georgians that it looks like an unfair fight.
But it does bring up the questions of where will Germany and France and Bolivia and where will some of the South America, where will their embassies at the United Nations be speaking on this? Do you have any clue yet?
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit. Say again, please.
I'm wondering where will France and where will Italy and Germany, where will they be standing on this conflict?
Well, we just finished major maritime war games with France and England in the North Atlantic in preparation for an Iranian blockade.
Yeah.
So, you know, that tells you where some of that is. And sadly, apparently, if we decide to go and screw with, Iran, bless their misguided hearts, the UK's going with us because they're I was mentioning earlier, their carrier strike force group from the centered around the HMS Ark Royal is likely headed to the Persian Gulf.
Well, is the Yellow with you today?
Yeah, she's in the chat room.
Okay, because I have made attempts to contact you both by email and by the Radio Inside Scoop chat room, and neither has made successful contact yet. And I'm still blocked out of the chat room. So. But I'm a suspicious.
Well, I have a feeling it's like what many listeners wrote in to say after your last phone call. You've got firewall.
Said that if you use real, you're already in trouble.
Well, you've got firewall problems. And something, you know, you've probably got, depending on what kind of firewall you've got, it's probably your computer blocking your access.
Well, my computer, yes. I've had goon problems, Bob. I have tech goon problems. What you've heard about how our Patriot Act is ever so slightly misused, it's true. And, they've been wanting me off the chat room. They well, not that I'm a big fish, I want to mind you, but they are assigned to me. They're on my computer.
But if that was the case, I have to think, Dave, that none of us would be able to get in there. If they want to shut that down, they can shut it down. Okay, but there's a lot of people in there all the time. I really,
yes, they are, and most of them I find myself in agreement with, although.
And ELO says that she responded to you at Mark's site.
Oh, let me go back and check that.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you soon then. A great conversation.
Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Stay with us.
Take care, Dave. Bye now. Yeah, so it's about 7 minutes past the hour. And we enter into our third hour. I've got a song here that our pal Sandra sent along. She says, I hope you all enjoy it. Pay close attention. We're lyric-oriented. She says, pay close attention to the lyrics. We will, Sandra, we will. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn.
Your land. I'm
tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Oh, yeah. That was hot. I don't think... You know, compared to the original, which was a profoundly socialist anthem, by the way, this follows very, very nicely in its footsteps. Sharon Jones of the Dap Kings, and that is some kind of hot. I was just sitting, we do the musical interludes, and I was just sitting here digging it. That was sweet. A couple of things to share with you along the way. Let's just deal with it this way. Obama is on vacation. And at the risk of coming across like a real jerk, I'm gonna say something, and I hope you all will forgive me. Obama is on vacation in Hawaii. Well, let's do the setup first, all right? Let's see how the for-profit media is spinning this. We have to do a little time travel now. We have to time travel back to the roundtable on ABC's This Week with George Snuffleupagus, to that profound pundit of profundity. Yeah, that works better. Cokie Roberts. You know, my mom and dad used to just hate her for sport. When Wilford Brimley would come on with one of his diabetes supply ads, my dad would always yell at the TV, "Go blazes, Wilford!" And to the point that it actually became a watchword within the family. So that, you know, when the kids were younger, there would be a chorus. It would be my dad and two or three grandchildren all at the same time saying, "Go to blazes, Wilford!" And when Cokie Roberts came on, my mother and my father would look at each other. That woman is the biggest know-it-all, know-nothing that I think I've ever heard. Know-it-all, know-nothing. Amen. So this is Cokie Roberts from Sunday's edition of This Week with George Snuffleupagus talking about Obama's vacation.
A lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill wringing their hands about Obama. He's not hitting back hard enough. Do you agree?
I don't. Part of his charm, such as it is for those who feel it, is his aristocratic langueur, his sort of relaxed, laid-back attitude. And as a result, he gives the impression...
French speaker, aristocratic langueur. Yeah, him and his baby, yeah. I guess he drinks a mean Merlot at the baseball that he loves. Oh God!
And sometimes, as a candidate, not with an instinct for the jugular, but for the capillaries, that he goes for small responses. You pointed one out this morning, talking about a war going on in Europe, and he's worried about some lobbyist working for McCain. But I don't think this is his main problem.
What is his main problem?
His main problem is that people have not yet decided that he ought to be the one sitting across the table from, to pick a name out of the ether, Putin.
Yeah, he has certainly come nowhere near closing the deal.
Here's Cokie.
As we've talked about before, in this year that should be such a Democratic year, given all the other indices, he is tied in the polls, and stage tied in the polls, and going off this week to a vacation in Hawaii right. does not make any sense whatsoever. I know his grandmother lives in Hawaii, and I know Hawaii is a state, but it has the look of him going...
Well, thank you, Geography B. Cokie Roberts. I know Hawaii is a state, and I know his grandmother lives in Hawaii, but it's...
going off to some sort of foreign exotic place. He should be in Myrtle Beach. And, you know, if he's going
to... Oh! Cokie, honey, Myrtle Beach, if I may be so bold, is in South Carolina. In South Carolina, they take people who look like Barack Obama and leave them swinging from trees, sweetheart. Okay? Just saying.
To take a vacation at this time. Well, and I just think that, you know, this is not the time to do that.
And there's plenty of time left. I mean, let's not forget, Barack Obama and his campaign beat the Clintons.
That's some other talking gas bag that I don't recognize. Yeah, yeah, no kidding. mercy. I know Hawaii. So that's Sunday. So that's Sunday. Well, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for today. This time on National Petroleum Radio. Here we go.
Now, Obama is spending the week on vacation in Hawaii. He's taking a vacation, he says, because it's you know, good for his family. But is it a good point in the presidential campaign?
It's a little rough to be doing it at this point, although he, you know, I think he's feeling somewhat secure. But Hawaii is also a somewhat odd place to be doing it. I know that he is from Hawaii, grew up there. His grandmother lives there.
Then why is it odd? Is it odd to go home for vacation? Is it odd to go visit grandma on vacation? Should he succeed and win his way to the presidency of the United States, he will never have a normal time away again for the rest of his life. Okay? The presidency is a transformative experience, and a lot of that transformation is in the negative. This is the closest thing that Barack Obama has to a chance to be normal and just sit around with grandma. Because, you know, grandma raised him. And I imagine the depth of the love that he feels for her is as profound as anybody's feelings for their own grandmother. But these Chablis-swilling members of the for-profit media can't see that. No, he's going off to a foreign exotic place. Last I checked, you didn't have to have a passport to get in or out of Hawaii, but who the hell am I? I'm not a blithering gas bag paid millions of dollars to spout this kind of crap on the for-profit media. Going home to see his granny makes him seem a little bit more exotic. And, you know, Hawaii's just a somewhat odd place. Lord God, you know, you'd kind of like to get her together with Mrs. Greenspan, and they could talk about, you know, how weird Hawaii is. She could talk about how weird Hawaii is, and then Mrs. Greenspan could say, well, you know, and it's it's like I said about Virginia, it's practically Appalachian. Morons. What a bunch of jackassed morons. I mean, sure enough, card-carrying members of the Jackassed Society.
But he has made such a point about how he is from Kansas, and, you know, the boy from Kansas and Kenya, and it makes him seem a little bit more exotic than perhaps he would want to come across as at this stage in the presidential campaign.
Lord God, I hope he just went to the Big Island or Oahu or something, because if he went to Kauai, I can see the freeper posts already. Kansas, Kenya, and Kauai. Barack Obama is a closet member of the KKK. It's symbol, it's code, it's symbolism. Oh, Jesus. just hurts. Okay, now the part where I might come across as a little bit of an ass, all right? And that is this. I respect and I sympathize with his desire to have one normal break and go see his grandmother before all the convention kerfuffle starts. Love that word, kerfuffle. It's just fun to say, kerfuffle, kerfuffle, kerfuffle. I respect that. But how's about, Senator Obama, you come out on the porch, or what is in Hawaii, that would be the lanai, wouldn't it? Come out on the lanai, and I'm sure all the for-profit media cameras would be rolling, and you say, I came home to see my grandma, and I'm lucky to be able to do it. Because in our country, as opposed to many civilized first world countries, in our country, most Americans don't get paid vacations. Never mind Hawaii. With gas prices being what they are, a lot of Americans can't even go to one of their state parks for a vacation. With the depression of actual earning power of the American worker, a lot of Americans cannot go on a vacation, cannot take a break, cannot afford to take a break, a respite from the two or three or four jobs that they have to work to make a go of it here in the Bush economic miracle that John McCain wants to extend for another 4 or 8 years. That's what I need from Senator Obama. That's the kind of fight back I'd like to see. Republican policies and Republican politics have gotten us to a point in this country where we are the hardest working, poorest paid, least respected working people in the so-called developed world. That is America. And that must be fixed. All over Europe, 6 weeks paid vacation and universal health care. All over Europe, or at least first world Europe. But America can't have that. And I would like to see Barack Obama asked why. Why is it that corporate America doesn't want American workers to have a damn paid vacation? Why can't working Americans get off the hamster treadmill for 2 or 3 weeks every year? And just make it all go away and stick their toes in the sand or walk their feet through high alpine valleys or set up a tent somewhere or, you know, hell, who am I? You know, go to Vegas. Go to Disney World. Why can't Americans do that? And we, you know what? That might actually resonate with some of the people who won't vote for their own interests. They won't vote for their own wallet interests. But maybe if you start talking about the time that you would like to have, the time of your life, getting out the handy cam and the still camera and going off to an amusement park or a beach or going fishing or hiking, seeing some historic monuments or seeing some historic roulette wheels, what the hell? That might actually resonate with the American people. On the other hand, Coco Roberts goes great with Coco Krispies. She wants to talk about how exotic and bizarre and weird Hawaii is. You know, they have unicorns there. You can't blame them. You really can't. They're in it for the money, okay? There's no journalism happening. They're in it for the money. And if you're in it for the money, you're not gonna catch the subtleties of what life is like for a family of four that makes $20,000 a year. If you're in it for the money, you don't understand why anybody, you know, in Appalachia would want to go to a place like Dollywood or Pigeon Forge. I don't think you could even get a halfway decent glass of Chardonnay down there. Bree, forget about it. We'd probably be sitting around eating American cheese on those Ritz cracker things and or sardines out of a can. Ew! Oh, Buffington, get me my smelling salts. I think I'm going to faint. She said sardines. Ew! You want to know where the elitists are? They ain't in the Obama camp. The elitists are there for us to see on parade every Sunday morning. The George Wills and the Smokey Roberts and the Bob Schieffers and the... Oh, God. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm okay. You're talking about Smokey Roberts.
Yes.
Well, your parents, I totally agree with them.
Oh, Lord, they despised her, Juanita. I mean, way back when they despised her.
Boy, they had some insight, didn't they? Because I found her out in 2000. Her and her husband also. Oh, well, just nobody likes a Gore. They just don't like him. He's just not likable. And, you know, what are they trying to do? I mean, they're not true Democrats. But she's supposed to be a Democrat. Her parents were. She's not the kind of Democrat I want.
No, I don't know. Well, no, that's one of those Democrats. I mean, if she is indeed a Democrat, she's one of those kind of Democrats that gives us a bad name.
Yes.
You know, that makes life. You know, she's never been to Hawaii.
I bet she has.
Yeah.
He said he wanted to go back to feel the spirit of Hawaii. Which I understand there is kind of a good feeling spirit there. I know they've got a lot of problems, but I had an uncle that was in Second World War, and he would go there to Hawaii. He loved it when he came back. Heck, home, he played Hawaiian music. He gives it shows, you know. He kind of get old, but I could see it now, you know. I could really understand it, but no, this is, we've got to get those people out of it. Of course, I know she's in, what is it, the news service, but there's a lot of them that I could just, you know, you don't speak for me. You don't, if nobody liked him, they wouldn't have voted for him as many people. They wouldn't have elected him as president.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what does she think she's accomplishing by telling him not to go to Hawaii? Baloney.
Well, I know. Now, the other side of this coin is I was checking over at our buddy Bart Kopp today, and Bart's not real happy about him being on vacation because it's dredging up really icky memories for him of John Kerry windsurfing off Martha's Vineyard when he should have been out punching George Bush in the face.
Yeah, I
get that, but I'm not going to begrudge a man a chance to go see Grandma.
Right.
You know, what kind of heartless monsters have we become if a fella can't go see his grandma?
Oh, if he didn't go see her, they'd make something out of it.
Oh, wow, Barack Obama didn't go see his grandmother in Hawaii. He clearly doesn't have any traditional American family values.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, you can't listen to those folks. You cannot listen to them. And I think, I'll tell you, I don't know, Bob.
you know what the difference is between a run-over skunk in the middle of the road and a run-over Cokie Roberts in the middle of the road?
No.
Skid marks in front of the skunk.
What?
Skid marks in front of the skunk. You know, what a loathsome creature. The George Will, and they're just loathsome. Because, again, there's no journalism involved.
No.
There's no reporting. What special intelligence does a right-wing thug like George Will
George Will is...
Or a pandering toady like Cokie Roberts. What qualifies them to be on the air? Where's the objective standard showing that they're smarter than me or you or anybody else listening to the program? Well, the short answer is there is no objective standard. They're on there to do a specific job, and the job they do is propping up right-wingers and criticizing, you know, Democrats for going on a vacation to see their grandmother.
There's another one, too. Broder? Broder. He's supposed to be. And that was another one. Boy, I tell you, because I was watching all that 9/11. I was watching all of that 2000 stuff, all the trials.
And Broder calls himself a liberal, and that's hilarious.
But I think that showed the true colors back then. And I know that that one that's got the same name as the guy, last name as the guy that's supposed to wear the bow tie.
Carlson, Margaret Carlson.
Yeah, they used to both be on CNN, and she was on there, and she would say stuff like that. People just don't like him. He's just not likable. I wrote her a letter one time. I said, you're ruining things for people like us, people like me, you know.
Yeah, and then there's the Maureen Dowd, you know, and she's another one of them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know why people bother to watch or read these people.
Yeah.
Except for educational purposes of seeing what's, you want to know what's wrong with, liberals aren't what's wrong with America. Progressives aren't what's wrong with America. Gay marriage is not what's wrong with America. Stem cell research is not what's wrong with America, Juanita. What's wrong with America is the for-profit media.
Yeah.
Or are the for-profit media, whichever.
And people that think that they know what's best for us people, and they don't know anything about us.
Well, exactly.
But like you were talking, you had that thing on a while ago, you were presenting, you know, about what the crazy liberals have done for this country.
Yeah.
And that's so true. And boy, they don't mind taking advantage of it when they need to or when they want to.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
You know.
Yep.
But anyway.
Well, Juanita, it's good to hear from you. I need to roll along. But I just
wanted to say I'm very disappointed about you not being able to go to.
I was disappointed. That's the least word we can use. Disappointed, disgusted, frustrated, angered. It's sad. It is sad.
Yeah, very sad. Because you would have really been good.
Well, and the other thing is that we had an opportunity to get the message out from Coal River Mountain Watch about what's going on here to people who might not know about mountaintop removal.
Right.
And that got foreclosed too.
Yeah. Well, When is Guy going to start broadcasting?
I haven't had that conversation with Guy yet, so I can't answer that question. But, I mean, I know he's going to be there for the whole thing, so.
Does it start this Friday?
No, it's the 24th.
Oh, I was thinking 14th. Oh, 24th. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you have a good night, Bob, and take care.
All right.
Thank you for all you say and do.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you so much, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And with all this talk, I'm going straight to the next phone line, but I just want to play something for you real quick, this talk about Hawaii. My son and daughters showed this to me, and this is just a charming thing. The gentleman is no longer with us. His name was Israel Kamakawiwole. You want to hear something gorgeous? Just check this out. Ukulele. Just gorgeous. And the video's over at YouTube. If you just type in IZ, and somewhere over the rainbow, it'll take you there, and choose the one that says HQ, and it's inspiring and charming, and yeah, that'd be a spirit worth trying to get in. Yeah, that'd be worth trying to get in touch with right before you enter the nightmare of the convention. Yeah, I'd say. Oh, but Hawaii's an exotic, foreign-sounding place. I guess Cokie missed out on that whole Hawaii 5-0 business, right? Yeah, book 'em, Dano. Ignorance, one. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, hey, it's Sandra.
Hey, Sandra, what's happening?
Listen, that song is great. They use that song in a, I don't know if it's a credit card commercial or some corporate nightmare. I heard it, you know.
Of course they did.
And I'm just like, are you kidding me? You know what I mean? But it's a really nice, you know, it's just, and I just thought, God, nothing's sacred, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't resist commenting on that. I mean, what is wrong with these people? What is wrong with Hawaii? It's a state, isn't it?
Last I checked.
And not only that, you know, I've been to Hawaii, and it's pretty damn nice.
So I've heard. I'd like to find out for myself someday.
Well, no, but it's just so over the top. I mean, are we supposed to really take their poo-pooing it seriously, those rich bastards who vacation on barges in the French Riviera? Hello? Hello? What the hell?
I know. But you know that, and I know that, and we all know that, Sandra. But how many, I mean, because this is the kind of thing that brings me back to earth and just makes me want to just kick something. How many people were watching that show on Sunday going, that's, yes, Hawaii is a weird place, Cokie. It's he's probably going to go to his secret mosque while he's there.
Oh, yeah, and convene with all the other darkies who are going to enslave Whitey when he takes power.
It just slays me. It does.
I mean, it is so...
It's his grandmother, for the love of God. I mean, do we have to fly her to him? I mean, it makes me crazy.
No, but the thing is, though, to me, I don't understand how, you know, it must be just unique in America that the elite rich bastards can speak to us and, you know, we're supposed to buy their common man crap. I mean, it's a joke, right? But I guess you're saying that people go along with this. They find it useful, this information?
Yeah, well, I'm terrified that there are millions of Americans who do, Sandra.
No, but Cokie Roberts is a pig from way back, you know?
With all four trotters in the trough.
No, and she's horrible, her and her whole, you know, so-called precious political lineages. You know what I mean? I can't stand her. I never could.
Well, yeah, I've got nothing for aristocracy, and she thinks she's an aristocrat, and it just really,
yeah,
really grates on my last nerve.
No, and, you know, George Will, he's another one that's just totally idiotic, you know?
George Will, see, if I actually saw this, see, I'm lucky, Sandra. I only saw this as a function of the hard, wonderful work they do over at Media Matters. If I had actually seen this on Sunday morning, my Sunday morning breakfast would have been put to challenge.
No, I don't even watch him anymore. I used to watch him religiously, you know?
Well, because once in a while something would happen. But then it turned into this the right wing talking points carnival, and you know, what's the point?
And not only that, I started, you know, I wised up and I started looking into who these people actually were. And for me, the media journalism ends if you make $1 million or more. You're not a journalist, you know what I mean?
No. And that's the thing, they don't even make a pretense of doing journalism.
Right, but you know, for them to be sort of viewed upon as part of the fourth estate, you know, it's just insulting. And so, you know, I don't watch it. I just think they're just people with opinions who have a big megaphone.
You remind me, Sandra, that I'm going to get my 1 hour of guilty television pleasure tonight. It's Monday. So here in another hour and 15 minutes or so, I will plop down in front of the demon box, and I'll watch Tony Bourdain for an hour, because you know that, you know, he doesn't sit there and talk about a foreign place or an exotic place, you know, like Hawaii, and talk about you know how elite it is. The guy actually goes and gets on the ground and tries to hang with normal people. He did a Hawaii show last season. Lo and behold, there he was eating spam sushi.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, the spam. I don't know. Well, I never could figure out what that was all about.
Oh, that's because that was the only meat they could get in the islands during the Second World War, and they fell in love with it.
Well, to be honest, that's about the only thing you can afford in Hawaii. It's awfully expensive.
Oh, I don't doubt it at all. Not at all.
But I mean,
I'd love to try.
Oh no, it's fantastic. I mean, you know, I was lucky enough to go there, you know, for a whole month, and it was fantastic, and I really didn't want to come back. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, it's great. It's just sort of, I don't understand why Obama has to be demeaned for going there, or
well, because he's Obama, and
what is the talking point? I'm trying to understand it.
He's an elitist again. He's being elite again. Didn't you hear Cokie say that he's supposed to go to Myrtle Beach where all the redneck white folks go?
She don't go to Myrtle Beach.
Hell no. I mean, it's probably a down year if she goes to Hilton Head.
Oh, please. You know what? It's just a joke. I mean, these people are always talking about what someone like Obama should do, and it's just despicable because no matter what they say about him, there's no way they're going to put this black man in a position of being more elite than them crackers running things. Sorry, but you know what I'm
saying? But isn't that at the end of the day, isn't that what the driving, motivating factor is in all of this? That they are scared to, that they're scared to death that he might be elevated over them, and that it challenges the superiority of their whiteness or something?
Well, I think what must be driving it, because it's definitely nonsensical, because this man can go see his grandmother. He has family there. I mean, what, he's supposed to move his mother to the south side of Chicago, and then that would be acceptable?
I mean, right, I was going to say, you know what, he's supposed to fly her to Watts?
No, you don't want to fly anybody to Watts.
I know, but you get my point. I mean,
I know, I understand, but it's just kind of like, you know, like you said, we all would like to have a vacation, you know, and you should talk about that, like you said.
Yeah, my last vacation was 10 years ago. I kid you not. And
yeah, I believe it.
And it's just, you know, I mean, and by that I mean a real vacation, you know, where you go and you stay in a hotel room and you stick your toes in the sand and Agnes was just so taken because she was talking about wanting to go on one of those dolphin cruises. We were down on the Gulf of Mexico at the Redneck Riviera, and she wanted to go on a dolphin cruise. And I said, you know, honey, I don't think we've got time for it. And the babies were real little, and she's like, well, you know, I don't think we could either, because I'd be afraid of one of them going overboard or something like that. You know, all those motherly worrying things.
Mm-hmm.
And then lo and behold, we're standing out on our balcony and talking about the fact that we can't go see the dolphins, so the dolphins come to see Agnes.
Mm-hmm.
No kidding. I mean, yeah, a whole school of them just right by the shoreline. They did everything but hold up a sign.
You're not supposed to experience that. You're supposed to, you know, live in drudgery and be glad for it. I mean, that's the message we seem to be getting, you know?
Yeah. Curse your lot and curse your bread and, you know, live a life of quiet desperation. Right. That's the America that's the American dream of the Republican Party.
And the envious of, you know, anyone who is doing something different, it's at your expense. I mean, that's the mode, you know?
Right.
It's so evil. But I guess it's working, because these poll numbers are really quite disturbing, too.
And I know that the optimists out there, Sandra, want to say that, well, you know, these polls are dummied up. They're weighted. They're freighted. They're frauds. No, you know what? I think the poll numbers are probably rock solid within, you know, 3 or 4 percentage points of margin of error. They probably are, because that is how profoundly screwed up this country is.
And not only that, but I mean, when Obama has to compete with a whole institution, i.e. the for-profit media, doing what they do, it's no wonder.
No, I mean, this,
I mean, I heard some idiot talk about how, well, should Obama be asked that question? Has he ever had an affair? I just about threw the radio out the window when I heard that.
Well, you know, there's another angle to that, too, and we talked a little bit about John Edwards on Friday, and as far as I'm concerned, it's over. But all of a sudden, we're giving credibility to the National Enquirer, right?
Mm.
Well, wasn't it the National Enquirer that a few months back was running that story about Laura Pickles moving out on George and going to the Mayflower Hotel?
And also, it's been nonstop with Bush and Condoleezza Hare.
Yeah, oh yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah,
been
yeah.
Going on for years.
Yeah. So,
you know, they've been lovers for years. And it's like, well, we don't ever, you know, that didn't jump into ABC Note. You know what I mean?
Right. Because it's not, it doesn't fit the script.
No, but also, though, with the Obama, you know, Obama has nothing to do with John Edwards' dalliances. And why aren't you asking about McCain and that blondie that he was doing on the plane, the lobbyist? We don't hear
sure.
about that.
Or, you know, let's just have a little chat about walking out on your first wife when she's crippled in a hospital bed. I mean, can we do that?
And then the likes of Newt Gingrich commenting on it. I mean, it's just scandalous how brazen these people are.
I'm lucky every toe on both feet is not broken from the stuff I kick.
Yeah, no, that pig, you know, what he did. And they all comment on Edwards thinking that, what, we don't know what the hell they are? I don't get it.
No, the night that I was actually at waiting to go into the ER with my big old badass kidney stone attack last week, when I saw Bill O'Reilly ask Karl Rove, well, if a Republican had an affair like John Edwards may have had, the liberal media would be on all over him, wouldn't it? And even Karl Rove was unable to keep a straight face at it.
Okay, because I'm like sitting here thinking, what in the hell? See, that's why I can't even watch any of this stuff. I look at Media Matter sometimes, but I really have distanced myself from this TV.
Yeah, what's the point? I mean, even if I still had CNN, and remember, my cable system got screwed up, so all I've got now is Fox for a news channel.
Is that for real?
Yeah, I kid you not. I'd have to pay a lot extra to get MSNBC or CNN or Headline News. All I got's Fox.
Your basic cable, because I hear that a lot. It seems to be that Fox has been able to land the basic cable deal.
Oh, yeah, there's some Sherman Act stuff going on, Sandra.
If you pay the cheapest rate, you're going to get Fox.
Bingo.
Wow, that's deep, man.
But even if I had CNN I sat down to watch it, I'd be telling the boy to go get me a peanut butter and banana sandwich and the Elvis gun because I'd have to shoot the TV again.
Oh no, yeah, CNN, they've really
there's no there, Sandra.
It's a joke.
With a brief respite of Keith Olbermann or maybe those moments when Rachel Maddow shows up and takes the nasty old Nazi Klansman Buchanan for a ride. That's all.
They're gonna eat her alive too if she don't watch it.
Sure they will.
I mean, I admire what she's trying to do, but good luck.
Yeah, and again, you know, eventually everybody gets taken up under that high mountain place and gets shown the world and all its dominions, and, okay, well, here's what you need to do.
Like something from The Omen 3?
Yeah, exactly from The Omen 3.
Oh, that image just popped in my mind.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like a cross between The Godfather and The Omen, and Omen
right,
3,
but,
right.
Yeah, I got you. Oh, no. Yeah, I'm at a loss for words on those images. Thank you. Hey, so you did like that song, huh?
Oh, man, that was wonderful.
No, I liked it a bit when she's talking about, it's that side, it's for us.
I caught that.
I was dying. I said, oh, snap, this is a great tune.
Is that new or?
No, it's 2005, so it is relatively new, yeah.
Okay, well, it went into the library. It'll see the light of day again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, their whole album, I mean, it's like really unusual for that kind of R&B to be being made now.
And I'm having a terrible brain slip here. The original's Woody Guthrie, right?
Yeah, that's what
I was.
There's also what are they called? Another group that does an interesting version of that record recently too. I can't remember it, but the album is really good.
But see that what she did is straight. I mean, it is in straight line spiritual connection with what Woody Guthrie was getting at in the first place.
Exactly, except she put a little, a little twist to it, about what's really going on here, which is. You know, I just thought when I listened to the lyrics, I thought, are you kidding me? When I first heard it.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a keeper. But, Everclear. You ever heard of them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they do This Land Is Your Land, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you should hear that. There's a good one.
Okay.
I mean, rock and roll is pretty good.
I wouldn't be surprised if that doesn't show up as a track of the night on John Fox's show some night now that you've mentioned it.
Yeah, so that's, Sharon Jones, I mean, it's just straight up R&B.
Oh, and what a set of pipes.
Late 60s type of R&B, it's great.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, what she did, that voice. Whoa.
Yeah, no, it's like I say, the whole album is, it's tasty, it's great. But yeah, because I used to DJ in a past life, so.
You can take the cure, but it never gets all the way out of the blood, Sandra.
Never.
Nope.
So you're always sort of, when I say DJ, I mean, I used to, play music. I wasn't on the radio talking about nothing. But, I have all sorts of, music, and it's a big part of my existence, thankfully.
Yeah, Well, I cranked up the monitors in here last night for Ferg to hear a couple of things. He's trying to learn some keyboarding. And Yeah, he's real psyched. He is bad psyched.
It's always a good, a good way to keep your sanity,
Yeah, it is, and I'm hoping I can wire this little Yamaha keyboard into the board here, because I think we can have a lot of fun with that. Sandra, I got to run along. We're out of time, but yeah, it's great hearing from you, and thanks for the tune.
Oh, no problem. Have a good evening.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye. Our pal Sandra in California, and that is it. Thank you to all of you. Thank you to the for your emails, your phone calls. Thank you for listening, however it is that you listen. Thank you for sharing your input. Thank you for helping to keep the Head On Radio Network going via your contributions, either at the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com or via snail mail, 1038 Head On, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. Thank you to our IT professional, our highly frustrated IT professional, Peter Godbold, right now, who has the world's worst internet service. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer and audio specialist. Thank you to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to our dear friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, the hardest working, bravest people I know. I encourage you to go to crmw.net, become a part of Coal River Mountain Watch. Help us out by going to coalriverwind.org. And signing the Coal River windmill petition, wind farm petition. And the Walker Cat billboard petition I mentioned earlier is at ipetitions.com/petition/catwalker. CATWALKER. Check that out. Sign it, too, if you don't mind. And always, 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 RMR, Gina. It's all for you.